Banasura said, O Lord Mahadev, I bow down to you, the spiritual master and controller of the worlds. You are like the heavenly tree that fulfills the desires of those whose desires are unfulfilled. These 1,000 arms you bestowed upon me have become merely a heavy burden. Besides you, I find no one in the three worlds worthy to fight. Eager to fight with the elephants who rule the directions, I went forth, pulverizing mountains with my arms, which were itching for battle. But even those great elephants fled in fear. Hearing this, Lord Shiva became angry and replied, Your flag will be broken, fool, when you have done battle with one who is my equal. That fight will vanquish your conceit. Thus advised, unintelligent Banasura was delighted. The fool then went home to wait for that which Lord Shiva had predicted, the destruction of his prowess. In a dream, Bana's daughter, the maiden Usha, had an amorous encounter with the son of Prajumna, though she had never before seen or heard of her lover. Losing sight of him in her dream, Usha suddenly sat up in the midst of her girlfriends, crying out, Where are you, my lover? She was greatly disturbed and embarrassed. Banasura had a minister named Kumbanda, whose daughter was Chitraleka. A companion of Usha's, she was filled with curiosity, and thus she inquired from her friend, Who are you searching for, O fine-browed one? What is this hankering you're feeling? Until now, O princess, I haven't seen any man take your hand in marriage. Usha said, In my dream I saw a certain man who had a dark blue complexion, lotus eyes, yellow garments, and mighty arms. He was the kind who touches women's hearts. It is that lover I search for. After making me drink the honey of his lips, he has gone elsewhere, and thus he has thrown me, hankering fervently for him, into the ocean of distress. Chitraleka said, I will remove your distress. If he is to be found anywhere in the three worlds, I will bring this future husband of yours who has stolen your heart. Please show me who he is. Saying this, Chitraleka proceeded to draw accurate pictures of various demigods, Gandharvas, Siddhas, Charanas, Panagas, Daityas, Vidyadharas, Yakshas, and human beings. Among the humans, Chitraleka drew pictures of the Vrishnis, including Shurasen, Anakadundubi, Balaram, and Krishna. When Usha saw the picture of Prajumna, she became bashful, and when she saw Aniruddha's picture, she bent her head down in embarrassment. Smiling, she exclaimed, He's the one! It's him! Chitraleka, endowed with mystic powers, recognized him as Krishna's grandson Aniruddha. My dear king, she then traveled by the mystic skyway to Dwarka, the city under Lord Krishna's protection. There she found Prajumna's son Aniruddha sleeping upon a fine bed. With her yogic power, she took him away to Shonitapur, where she presented her girlfriend Usha with her beloved. When Usha beheld him, the most beautiful of men, her face lit up with joy. She took the son of Prajumna to her private quarters, which men were forbidden even to see, and there she enjoyed with him. Usha worshipped Aniruddha with faithful service, offering him priceless garments, along with garlands, fragrances, incense, lamps, sitting places, and so on. She also offered him beverages, all types of food, and sweet words. As he thus remained hidden in the young lady's quarters, Aniruddha did not notice the passing of the days, for his senses were captivated by Usha, whose affection for him ever increased. The female guards eventually noticed unmistakable symptoms of romantic involvement in Usha, who, having broken her maiden vow, was being enjoyed by the Yadu hero and showing signs of conjugal happiness. The guards went to Banasura and told him, O king, we have detected in your daughter the kind of improper behavior that spoils the reputation of a young girl's family. We have been carefully watching over her, never leaving our posts, O master. So we cannot understand how this maiden, whom no man can even see, has been corrupted within the palace. Very agitated to hear of his daughter's corruption, Banasura rushed at once to the maiden's quarters. There he saw the pride of the Yadus, Aniruddha. Banasura saw before him Cupid's own son, possessed of unrivaled beauty, with dark blue complexion, yellow garments, lotus eyes, and formidable arms. His face was adorned with effulgent earrings and hair, and also with smiling glances. As he sat opposite his most auspicious lover, playing with her at dice, there hung between his arms a garland of spring jasmines that had been smeared with kumkum powder from her breasts when he had embraced her. Banasura was astonished to see all this. Seeing Banasura enter with many armed guards, Aniruddha raised his iron club and stood resolute, ready to strike anyone who attacked him. He resembled death personified, holding his rod of punishment. As the guards converged on him from all sides, trying to capture him, Aniruddha struck them just as the leader of a pack of boars strikes back at dogs. Hit by his blows, the guards fled the palace, running for their lives with shattered heads, thighs, and arms. But even as Aniruddha was striking down the army of Bana, that powerful son of Bali angrily caught him with the mystic Nagapasha ropes. When Usha heard of Aniruddha's capture, she was overwhelmed with grief and depression. Her eyes filled with tears, and she wept. Chapter 63. Lord Krishna Fights with Banasura. Sukadeva Goswami said, "O descendant of Bharat, the relatives of Aniruddha, not seeing him return, continued to lament as the four rainy months passed. After hearing from Narada the news of Aniruddha's deeds and his capture, the Vrishnis, who worshipped Lord Krishna as their personal deity, went to Shonitapur. With Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna in the lead, the chiefs of the Satvata clan, Pradyumna, Satyaki, Gada, Samba, Sarana, Nanda, Upananda, Bhadra, and others, converged with an army of 12 divisions and laid siege to Banasura's capital, completely surrounding the city on all sides. Banasura became filled with anger upon seeing them destroy his city's suburban gardens, ramparts, watchtowers, and gateways, and thus he went out to confront them with an army of equal size. Lord Rudra, accompanied by his son Kartikeya and the Prematas, came riding on Nandi, his bull carrier, to fight Balaram and Krishna on Bana's behalf. A most astonishing, tumultuous, and hair-raising battle then commenced, with Lord Krishna matched against Lord Shankara, and Pradyumna against Kartikeya. Lord Balaram fought with Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, Samba with Bana's son, and Satyaki with Bana. Brahma and the other ruling demigods, along with Siddhas, Charanas, and great sages, as well as Gandharvas, Apsaras, and Yakshas, all came in their celestial airplanes to watch. With sharp-pointed arrows discharged from his bow shanga, Lord Krishna drove away the various followers of Lord Shiva, Bhutas, Pramatas, Guhyakas, Dakinis, Yatudhanas, Vetalas, Vinayakas, Pretas, Matas, Pishachas, Kushmandas, and Brahmarakshasas. Lord Shiva, wielder of the trident, shot various weapons at Lord Krishna, wielder of shanga. But Lord Krishna was not in the least perplexed. He neutralized all these weapons with appropriate counter-weapons. Lord Krishna counteracted a Brahmastra with another Brahmastra, a wind weapon with a mountain weapon, a fire weapon with a rain weapon, and Lord Shiva's personal Pashupatastra weapon with his own personal weapon, the Narayanastra. After bewildering Lord Shiva by making him yawn with a yawning weapon, Lord Krishna proceeded to strike down Banasura's army with his sword, club, and arrows. Lord Kartikeya was distressed by the flood of Pradyumna's arrows raining down from all sides, and thus he fled the battlefield on his peacock as blood poured from his limbs. Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, tormented by Lord Balaram's club, fell down dead. When the soldiers of these two demons saw that their leaders had been killed, they scattered in all directions. Banasura was furious to see his entire military force being torn apart. Leaving his fight with Satyaki, he charged across the battlefield on his chariot and attacked Lord Krishna. Excited to a frenzy by the fighting, Bana simultaneously pulled taut all the strings of his 500 bows and fixed 2 arrows on each string. Lord Sri Hari split every one of Banasura's bows simultaneously, and also struck down his chariot driver, chariot, and horses. The Lord then sounded his conch shell. Just then, Banasura's mother, Kotara, desiring to save her son's life, appeared before Lord Krishna naked and with her hair undone. Lord Krishna turned his face away to avoid seeing the naked woman, and Banasura, deprived of his chariot, his bow shattered, took the opportunity to flee into his city. After Lord Shiva's followers had been driven away, the Shivadrara, who had 3 heads and 3 feet, pressed forward to attack Lord Krishna. As the Shivadrara approached, he seemed to burn everything in the 10 directions. Seeing this personified weapon approach, Lord Narayan then released his own personified fever weapon, the Vishnudrara. The Shivadrara and Vishnudrara thus battled each other. The Shivadrara, overwhelmed by the strength of the Vishnudrara, cried out in pain. But finding no refuge, the frightened Shivadrara approached Lord Krishna, the master of the senses, hoping to attain his shelter. Thus, with joined palms, he began to praise the Lord. The Shivadrara said, "I bow down to you of unlimited potencies, the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul of all beings. You possess pure and complete consciousness and are the cause of cosmic creation, maintenance, and dissolution. Perfectly peaceful, you are the absolute truth to whom the Vedas indirectly refer. Time, fate, karma, the jiva and his propensities, the subtle material elements, the material body, the life air, false ego, the various senses, and the totality of these as reflected in the living being's subtle body, all this constitutes your material illusory energy, maya, an endless cycle like that of seed and plant. I take shelter of you, the negation of this maya. With various intentions, you perform pastimes to maintain the demigods, the saintly persons, and the codes of religion for this world. By these pastimes, you also kill those who stray from the right path and live by violence. Indeed, your present incarnation is meant to relieve the earth's burden. I am tortured by the fierce power of your terrible fever weapon, which is cold yet burning. All embodied souls must suffer as long as they remain bound to material ambitions and thus averse to serving your feet." The Supreme Lord said, "O three-headed one, I am pleased with you. May your fear of my fever weapon be dispelled, and may whoever remembers our conversation here have no reason to fear you." Thus addressed, the Maheshwarajvara bowed down to the infallible Lord and went away. But Banasura then appeared, riding forth on his chariot to fight Lord Krishna. Carrying numerous weapons in his 1,000 hands, the terribly infuriated demon shot many arrows at Lord Krishna, the carrier of the disc weapon. As Bana continued hurling weapons at him, the Supreme Lord began using his razor-sharp chakra to cut off Banasura's arms as if they were tree branches. Lord Shiva felt compassion for his devotee Banasura, whose arms were being cut off, and thus he approached Lord Krishna and spoke to him as follows. "You alone are the absolute truth, the supreme light, the mystery hidden within the verbal manifestation of the absolute. Those whose hearts are spotless can see you, for you are uncontaminated like the sky. The sky is your navel, fire your face, water your semen, and heaven your head. The cardinal directions are your sense of hearing, herbal plants the hairs on your body, and water-bearing clouds the hair on your head. The earth is your foot, the moon your mind, and the sun your vision, while I am your ego. The ocean is your abdomen, Indra your arm, Lord Brahma your intelligence, the progenitor of mankind your genitals, and religion your heart. You are indeed the original Purusha, creator of the worlds. Your current descent into the material realm, O Lord of unrestricted power, is meant for upholding the principles of justice and benefiting the entire universe. We demigods, each depending on your grace and authority, develop the 7 planetary systems. You are the original person, one without a second, transcendental and self-manifesting. Uncaused, you are the cause of all, and you are the ultimate controller. You are nonetheless perceived in terms of the transformations of matter effected by your illusory energy, transformations you sanction so that the various material qualities can fully manifest. O Almighty One, just as the sun, though hidden by a cloud, illuminates the cloud and all other visible forms as well, so you, although hidden by the material qualities, remain self-luminous and thus reveal all those qualities along with the living entities who possess them. their intelligence bewildered by your maya, fully attached to children, wife, home, and so on. Persons immersed in the ocean of material misery sometimes rise to the surface and sometimes sink down. One who has attained this human form of life as a gift from God, yet who fails to control his senses and honor your feet, is surely to be pitied, for he is only cheating himself. That mortal who rejects you, his true self, dear most friend and Lord, for the sake of sense objects, whose nature is just the opposite, refuses nectar and instead consumes poison. I, Lord Brahma, the other demigods, and the pure-minded sages have all surrendered wholeheartedly unto you, our dear most self and Lord. Let us worship you, the Supreme Lord, to be freed from material life. You are the maintainer of the universe and the cause of its creation and demise. Equipoised and perfectly at peace, you are the true friend, self, and worshipable Lord. You are one without a second, the shelter of all the worlds and all souls. This Manasar is my dear and faithful follower, and I have awarded him freedom from fear. Therefore, my Lord, please grant him your mercy, just as you showed mercy to Prahlad, the Lord of the demons. The Supreme Lord said, My dear Lord Shiva, for your pleasure we must certainly do what you have requested of us. I fully agree with your conclusion. I will not kill this demonic son of Virochini, for I gave Prahlad Maharaj the benediction that I would not kill any of his descendants. It was to subdue Banasura's false pride that I severed his arms, and I slew his mighty army because they had become a burden to the earth. This demon, who still has four arms, will be immune to old age and death, and he will serve as one of your principal attendants. Thus he will have nothing to fear on any account. Thus attaining freedom from fear, Banasura offered obeisances to Lord Krishna by touching his head to the ground. Bana then seated Aniruddha and his bride on their chariot and brought them before the Lord. Lord Krishna then placed Aniruddha and his bride, both beautifully adorned with fine clothes and ornaments, at the front of the party and surrounded them with a full military division. Thus Lord Krishna took his leave of Lord Shiva and departed. The Lord then entered his capital. The city was lavishly decorated with flags and victory arches, and its avenues and crossways were all sprinkled with water. As conch shells, anakas, and dundubi drums resounded, the Lord's relatives, the Brahmins, and the general populace all came forward to greet him respectfully. Whoever rises early in the morning and remembers Lord Krishna's victory in his battle with Lord Shiva will never experience defeat. Chapter 64, The Deliverance of King Riga. Sri Badarayani said, O King, one day Samba, Pradyumna, Charu, Banu, Gada, and other young boys of the Yadu dynasty went to a small forest to play. After playing for a long time, they became thirsty. As they searched for water, they looked inside a dry well and saw a peculiar creature. The boys were astonished to behold this creature, a lizard who looked like a hill. They felt sorry for it and tried to lift it out of the well. They caught on to the trapped lizard with leather thongs and then with woven ropes, but still they could not lift it out. So they went to Lord Krishna and excitedly told him about the creature. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, maintainer of the universe, went to the well and saw the lizard. Then with his left hand he easily lifted it out. Touched by the hand of the glorious Supreme Lord, the being at once gave up its lizard form and assumed that of a resident of heaven. His complexion was beautifully colored like molten gold, and he was adorned with wonderful ornaments, clothes, and garlands. Lord Krishna understood the situation, but to inform people in general, he inquired as follows, Who are you, O greatly fortunate one? Seeing your excellent form, I think you must surely be an exalted demigod. By what past activity were you brought to this condition? It seems you did not deserve such a fate, O good soul. We are eager to know about you, so please inform us about yourself, if, that is, you think this the proper time and place to tell us. Shukadeva Goswami said, Thus questioned by Krishna, whose forms are unlimited, the king, his helmet as dazzling as the sun, bowed down to the Lord and replied as follows: I am a king known as Nriga, the son of Ikshvaku. Perhaps, O Lord, you have heard of me when lists of charitable men were recited. What could possibly be unknown to you, O Master? With vision undisturbed by time, you witness the minds of all living beings. Nevertheless, on your order I will speak. I gave in charity as many cows as there are grains of sand on the earth, stars in the heavens, or drops in a rain shower. Young, brown, milk-laden cows, who were well-behaved, beautiful, and endowed with good qualities, who were all acquired honestly, and who had gilded horns, silver-plated hooves, and decorations of fine ornamental cloths and garlands, such were the cows, along with their calves, that I gave in charity. I first honored the Brahmins who were recipients of my charity by decorating them with fine ornaments. Those most exalted Brahmins whose families were in need were young and possessed of excellent character and qualities. They were dedicated to truth, famous for their austerity, vastly learned in the Vedic scriptures, and saintly in their behavior. I gave them cows, land, gold, and houses, along with horses, elephants, and marriageable girls with maidservants, as well as sesame, silver, fine beds, clothing, jewels, furniture, and chariots. In addition, I performed Vedic sacrifices and executed various pious welfare activities. Once a cow belonging to a certain first-class Brahmin wandered away and entered my herd. Unaware of this, I gave that cow in charity to a different Brahmin. When the cow's first owner saw her being led away, he said, "She's mine!" The second Brahmin, who had accepted her as a gift, replied, "No, she's mine! Nriga gave her to me!" As the two Brahmins argued, each trying to fulfill his own purpose, they came to me. One of them said, "You gave me this cow." And the other said, "But you stole it from me." Hearing this, I was bewildered. Finding myself in a terrible dilemma concerning my duty in the situation, I humbly entreated both the Brahmins. "I will give 100,000 of the best cows in exchange for this one. Please give her back to me. Your good selves should be merciful to me, your servant. I did not know what I was doing. Please save me from this difficult situation, or I'll surely fall into a filthy hell." The present owner of the cow said, "I don't want anything in exchange for this cow, O king," and went away. The other Brahmin declared, "I don't want even 10,000 more cows than you are offering," and he too went away. O Lord of Lords, O Master of the Universe, the agents of Yamaraj, taking advantage of the opportunity thus created, later carried me to his abode. There Yamaraj himself questioned me, "My dear king, do you wish to experience the results of your sins first, or those of your piety? Indeed, I see no end to the dutiful charity you have performed, or to your consequent enjoyment in the radiant heavenly planets." I replied, "First, my lord, let me suffer my sinful reactions." And Yamaraj said, "Then fall." At once I fell, and while falling I saw myself becoming a lizard, O master. O Keshava, as your servant I was devoted to the Brahmins and generous to them, and I always hankered for your audience. Therefore, even till now, I have never forgotten my past life. O Almighty One, how is it that my eyes see you here before me? You are the Supreme Soul, whom the greatest masters of mystic yoga can meditate upon within their pure hearts only by employing the spiritual eye of the Vedas. Then how, O Transcendental Lord, are you directly visible to me, since my intelligence has been blinded by the severe tribulations of material life? Only one who has finished his material entanglement in this world should be able to see you. O Deva Deva, Jagannath, Govinda, Purushottama, Narayan, Rishikesh, Punyashloka, Achyuta, Abdeya, O Krishna, please permit me to depart for the world of the demigods. Wherever I live, O Master, may my mind always take shelter of your lotus feet. I offer my repeated obeisances unto you, Krishna, the son of Vasudev. You are the source of all beings, the supreme absolute truth, the possessor of unlimited potencies, the master of all spiritual disciplines. Having spoken thus, Maharaj Nriga circumambulated Lord Krishna and touched his crown to the Lord's feet. Granted permission to depart, King Mriga then boarded a wonderful celestial airplane as all the people present looked on. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, who is especially devoted to the Brahmins and who embodies the essence of religion, then spoke to his personal associates and thus instructed the royal class in general. Lord Krishna said, "How indigestible is the property of a Brahmin, even when enjoyed just slightly and by one more potent than fire? What then to speak of kings who try to enjoy it, presuming themselves lords? I do not consider hala hala to be real poison, because it has an antidote. But a Brahmin's property, when stolen, can truly be called poison, for it has no antidote in this world. Poison kills only the person who ingests it, and an ordinary fire may be extinguished with water. But the fire generated from the kindling wood of a Brahmin's property burns the thief's entire family down to the root. If a person enjoys a Brahmin's property without receiving due permission, that property destroys three generations of his family. But if he takes it by force or gets the government or other outsiders to help him usurp it, then 10 generations of his ancestors and 10 generations of his descendants are all destroyed. Members of the royal order, blinded by royal opulence, fail to foresee their own downfall. Childishly hankering to enjoy a Brahmin's property, they are actually hankering to go to hell. For as many years as there are particles of dust touched by the tears of generous Brahmins who have dependent families and whose property is stolen, uncontrolled kings who usurp a Brahmin's property are cooked, along with their royal families, in the hell known as Kumbhi Paka. Whether it be his own gift or someone else's, a person who steals a Brahmin's property will take birth as a worm in feces for 60,000 years. I do not desire Brahmin's wealth. Those who lust after it become short-lived and are defeated. They lose their kingdoms and become snakes who trouble others. My dear followers, never treat a learned Brahmin harshly, even if he has sinned. Even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you, always continue to offer him obeisances. Just as I always carefully bow down to Brahmins, so all of you should likewise bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise. When a Brahmin's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as the Brahmin's cow did to Nirga. Having thus instructed the residents of Dwarka, Lord Mukunda, purifier of all the worlds, entered his palace. Chapter 65. Lord Balaram visits Vrindavan. Shukadev Goswami said, "O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and traveled to Nanda Gokula. Having long suffered the anxiety of separation, the cowherd men and their wives embraced Lord Balaram. The Lord then offered respects to his parents, and they joyfully greeted him with prayers. Nanda and Yashoda prayed, "O descendant of Dasharatha, O Lord of the universe, may you and your younger brother Krishna ever protect us." Saying this, they raised Sri Balaram onto their laps, embraced him, and moistened him with tears from their eyes. Lord Balaram then paid proper respects to the elder cowherd men, and the younger ones all greeted him respectfully. He met them all with smiles, handshakes, and so on, dealing personally with each one according to age, degree of friendship, and family relationship. Then, after resting, the Lord accepted a comfortable seat, and they all gathered around him. With voices faltering out of love for him, those cowherds, who had dedicated everything to lotus-eyed Krishna, asked him about the health of their dear ones in Dwarka, and Balaram in turn asked about the cowherd's welfare. The cowherd said, "O Rama, are all our relatives doing well? And Rama, do all of you with your wives and children still remember us? It is our great fortune that sinful Kamsa has been killed and our dear relatives freed. And it is also our good fortune that our relatives have killed and defeated their enemies and found complete security in a great fortress." Shukadev Goswami continued, "Honored to have the personal audience of Lord Balaram, the young gopi smiled and asked him, 'Is Krishna, the darling of the city women, living happily? Does he remember his family members, especially his father and mother? Do you think he will ever come back even once to see his mother? And does mighty Arm Krishna remember the service we always did for him? For Krishna's sake, we abandoned our mothers, fathers, brothers, husbands, children, and sisters, even though these family relations are difficult to give up. But now, O Lord, that same Krishna has suddenly abandoned us and gone away, breaking off all affectionate ties with us. And yet how could any woman fail to trust his promises? How can intelligent city women possibly trust the words of one whose heart is so unsteady and who is so ungrateful? They must believe him because he speaks so wonderfully, and also because his beautiful smiling glances arouse their lust. Why bother talking about him, dear gopis? Please talk of something else. If he passes his time without us, then we shall similarly pass ours without him. While speaking these words, the young cowherd women remembered Lord Krishna's laughter, his pleasing conversations with them, his attractive glances, his style of walking, and his loving embraces. Thus they began to cry. Lord Balaram, the attractor of all, being expert at various kinds of conciliation, consoled the gopis by relaying to them the confidential messages Lord Krishna had sent with him. These messages deeply touched the gopis' hearts. Lord Balaram, the personality of Godhead, resided there for the 2 months of Madhu and Madhava, and during the nights he gave his cowherd girlfriends conjugal pleasure. In the company of numerous women, Lord Balaram enjoyed in a garden by the Yamuna River. This garden was bathed in the rays of the full moon and caressed by breezes bearing the fragrance of night-blooming lotuses. Sent by the demigod Varuna, the divine Varuni liquor flowed from a tree hollow and made the entire forest even more fragrant with its sweet aroma. The wind carried to Balaram the fragrance of that flood of sweet liquor, and when he smelled it, he went to the tree. There he and his female companions drank. As the Gandharvas sang his glories, Lord Balaram enjoyed within the brilliant circle of young women. He appeared just like Indra's elephant, the lordly Airavata, enjoying in the company of she-elephants. At that time, kettle drums resounded in the sky, the Gandharvas joyfully rained down flowers, and the great sages praised Lord Balaram's heroic deeds. As his deeds were sung, Lord Balaram wandered as if inebriated among the various forests with his girlfriends. His eyes rolled from the effects of the liquor. Intoxicated with joy, Lord Balaram sported flower garlands, including the famous Vaijayanti. He wore a single earring, and beads of perspiration decorated his smiling lotus face like snowflakes. The Lord then summoned the Yamuna River so that he could play in her waters, but she disregarded his command, thinking he was drunk. This angered Balaram, and he began dragging the river with the tip of his plow. Lord Balaram said, "O sinful one disrespecting me, you do not come when I call you, but rather move only by your own whim. Therefore, with the tip of my plow, I shall bring you here in 100 streams." Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus scolded by the Lord, the frightened river goddess Yamuna came and fell at the feet of Sri Balaram, the beloved descendant of Yadu. Trembling, she spoke to him the following words, 'Rama, Rama, almighty armed one, I know nothing of your prowess. With a single portion of yourself you hold up the earth, O Lord of the universe. My Lord, please release me. O soul of the universe, I didn't understand your position as the supreme Godhead, but now I have surrendered unto you, and you are always kind to your devotees.'" Thereupon Lord Balaram released the Yamuna, and like the king of the elephants with his entourage of she-elephants, he entered the river's water with his female companions. The Lord played in the water to his full satisfaction, and when he came out, Goddess Kanti presented him with blue garments, precious ornaments, and a brilliant necklace. Lord Balaram dressed himself in the blue garments and put on the gold necklace. Anointed with fragrances and beautifully adorned, he appeared as resplendent as Indra's royal elephant. Even today, one can see how the Yamuna flows through the many channels created when it was dragged by the unlimitedly powerful Lord Balaram. Thus, she demonstrates his prowess. For Lord Balaram, all the nights passed like a single night as he enjoyed in Braja, his mind enchanted by the exquisite charm and beauty of Braja's young ladies. Chapter 66, Kaundrika, the false Vasudev. Shukadev Goswami said, O King, while Lord Balaram was away visiting Nanda's village of Braja, the ruler of Karusha, foolishly thinking, I am the Supreme Lord, Vasudev, sent a messenger to Lord Krishna. Kaundrika was emboldened by the flattery of childish men, who told him, You are Vasudev, the Supreme Lord and Master of the universe, who have now descended to the earth. Thus he imagined himself to be the infallible personality of Godhead. Slow-witted King Kaundrika sent a messenger to the inscrutable Lord Krishna at Dwaraka. Kaundrika was acting just like an unintelligent child whom other children are pretending is a king. Arriving in Dwaraka, the messenger found lotus-eyed Krishna in his royal assembly and relayed the king's message to that almighty Lord. On Kaundrika's behalf, the messenger said, I am the one and only Lord Vasudev, and there is no other. It is I who have descended to this world to show mercy to the living beings. Therefore, give up your false name. O Satpata, give up my personal symbols, which out of foolishness you now carry, and come to me for shelter. If you do not, then you must give me battle. King Ugrasen and the other members of the assembly laughed loudly when they heard this vain boasting of unintelligent Kaundrika. The personality of Godhead, after enjoying the jokes of the assembly, told the messenger to relay a message to his master. You fool! I will indeed let loose the weapons you boast of in this way. When you lie dead, O fool, your face covered by vultures, herons, and vata birds, you will become the shelter of dogs. When the Lord had thus spoken, the messenger conveyed his insulting reply to his master in its entirety. Lord Krishna then mounted his chariot and went to the vicinity of Kashi. Upon observing Lord Krishna's preparations for battle, the mighty warrior Kaundrika quickly went out of the city with two full military divisions. Kaundrika's friend, the king of Kashi, followed behind, leading the rear guard with three Akshauhini divisions. Lord Krishna saw that Kaundrika was carrying the Lord's own insignia, such as the conchel, disc, sword, and club, and also an imitation Shanga bow and Shivat's mark. He wore a mock Kaustubha gem, was decorated with a garland of forest flowers, and was dressed in upper and lower garments of fine yellow silk. His banner bore the image of Garuda, and he wore a valuable crown and gleaming shark-shaped earrings. Lord Hari laughed heartily when he saw how the king had dressed up in exact imitation of his own appearance, just like an actor on a stage. The enemies of Lord Hari attacked him with tridents, clubs, bludgeons, pikes, rishtis, barbed darts, lances, swords, axes, and arrows. But Lord Krishna fiercely struck back at the army of Kaundrika and Kashiraj, which consisted of elephants, chariots, cavalry, and infantry. The Lord tormented his enemies with his club, sword, Sudarshan disc, and arrows, just as the fire of annihilation torments the various kinds of creatures at the end of a cosmic age. The battlefield, strewn with the dismembered chariots, horses, elephants, humans, mules, and camels that had been cut to pieces by the Lord's disc weapon, shone like the gruesome playground of Lord Bhutapati, giving pleasure to the wise. Lord Krishna then addressed Kaundrika. My dear Kaundrika, the very weapons you spoke of through your messenger, I now release unto you. O fool, now I shall make you renounce my name, which you have falsely assumed, and I will certainly take shelter of you if I do not wish to fight you. Having thus derided Kaundrika, Lord Krishna destroyed his chariot with his sharp arrows. The Lord then cut off his head with the Sudarshan disc, just as Lord Indra lops off a mountain peak with his thunderbolt weapon. With his arrows, Lord Krishna similarly severed Kashiraj's head from his body, sending it flying into Kashi like a lotus flower thrown by the wind. Having thus killed envious Kaundrika and his ally, Lord Krishna returned to Dwaraka. As he entered the city, the Siddhas of heaven chanted his immortal nectarian glories. By constantly meditating upon the Supreme Lord, Kaundrika shattered all his material bonds. Indeed, by imitating Lord Krishna's appearance, he ultimately became Krishna conscious. Seeing a head decorated with earrings lying at the gate of the royal palace, the people present were puzzled. Some of them asked, What is this? And others said, It is a head, but whose is it? When they recognized it as the head of their king, the Lord of Kashi, his queens, sons, and other relatives, along with all the citizens of the city, began to cry pitifully, "Alas, we are killed! Oh, my lord, my lord!" After the king's son Sudakshina had performed the obligatory funeral rituals for his father, he resolved within his mind, "Only by killing my father's murderer can I avenge his death." Thus the charitable Sudakshina, together with his priests, began worshipping Lord Shiva with great attention. Satisfied by the worship, the powerful Lord Shiva appeared in the sacred precinct of Abhimukta and offered Sudakshina his choice of benedictions. The prince chose as his benediction a means to slay his father's killer. Lord Shiva told him, "Accompanied by Brahmins, serve the Dakshinagni fire, the original priest, following the injunctions of the Abhichara ritual. Then the Dakshinagni fire, together with many pramatas, will fulfill your desire if you direct it against someone inimical to the Brahmins." So instructed, Sudakshina strictly observed the ritualistic vows and invoked the Abhichara against Lord Krishna. Thereupon, the fire rose up out of the altar pit, assuming the form of an extremely fearsome, naked person. The fiery creature's beard and tuft of hair were like molten copper, and his eyes emitted blazing hot cinders. His face looked most frightful with its fangs and terrible arched and furrowed brows. As he licked the corners of his mouth with his tongue, the demon shook his flaming trident. On legs as tall as palm trees, the monster raced toward Dwaraka in the company of ghostly spirits, shaking the ground and burning the world in all directions. Seeing the approach of the fiery demon created by the Abhichara ritual, the residents of Dwaraka were all struck with fear, like animals terrified by a forest fire. Distraught, the people cried out to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was then playing at dice in the royal court. "Save us! Save us, O Lord of the three worlds, from this fire burning up the city!" When Lord Krishna heard the people's agitation and saw that even his own men were disturbed, that most worthy giver of shelter simply laughed and told them, "Do not fear, I shall protect you." The Almighty Lord, the internal and external witness of all, understood that the monster had been produced by Lord Shiva from the sacrificial fire. To defeat the demon, Krishna dispatched his disc weapon, who was waiting at his side. The Sudarshan Chakra blazed forth like millions of suns. His effulgence blazed like the fire of universal annihilation. And with his heat, he pained the sky, all the directions, heaven and earth, and also the fiery demon. Frustrated by the power of Lord Krishna's weapon, the fiery creature produced by black magic turned his face away and retreated. Created for violence, the demon then returned to Kashi, where he surrounded the city and then burned Sudakshina and his priests to death, even though Sudakshina was his creator. Lord Vishnu's disc also entered Kashi in pursuit of the fiery demon, and proceeded to burn the city to the ground, including all its assembly halls and residential palaces with raised porches, its numerous marketplaces, gateways, watchtowers, warehouses, and treasuries, and all the buildings housing elephants, horses, chariots, and grains. After burning down the entire city of Kashi, Lord Vishnu's Sudarshan Chakra returned to the side of Sri Krishna, whose actions are effortless. Any mortal who recounts this heroic pastime of Lord Krishna's, or who simply hears it attentively, will become freed from all sins. Chapter 67, Lord Balaram Slays Dravida Gorilla. The glorious King Parikshit said, "I wish to hear further about Sri Balaram, the unlimited and immeasurable Supreme Lord, whose activities are all astounding. What else did he do?" Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, "There was an ape named Dravida who was a friend of Narakasura's. This powerful Dravida, the brother of Mainda, had been instructed by King Sugriva. To avenge the death of his friend Naraka, the ape Dravida ravaged the land, setting fires that burned cities, villages, mines, and cowherd dwellings. Once, Dravida tore up a number of mountains and used them to devastate all the neighboring kingdoms, especially the province of Anarta, wherein dwelt his friend's killer, Lord Hari. Another time, he entered the ocean, and with the strength of 10,000 elephants, he churned up its water with his arms and thus submerged the coastal regions. The wicked ape tore down the trees in the hermitages of exalted sages and contaminated their sacrificial fires with his feces and urine. Just as a wasp imprisons smaller insects, he He arrogantly threw both men and women into caves in a mountain valley and sealed the caves shut with boulders. Once, while Dravida was thus engaged in harassing the neighboring kingdoms and polluting women of respectable families, he heard very sweet singing coming from Rivataka Mountain. So he went there. There he saw Sri Balaram, the lord of the Yadus, adorned with a garland of lotuses and appearing most attractive in every limb. He was singing amidst a crowd of young women, and since he had drunk Varuni liquor, his eyes rolled as if he were intoxicated. His body shone brilliantly as he behaved like an elephant in rut. The mischievous ape climbed a tree branch and then revealed his presence by shaking the trees and making the sound, Kila Kila! When Lord Baladev's consorts saw the ape's impudence, they began to laugh. After all, they were young girls who were fond of joking and prone to silliness. Even as Lord Balaram looked on, Dravida insulted the girls by making odd gestures with his eyebrows, coming right in front of them and showing them his anus. Angered, Lord Balaram, the best of fighters, hurled a rock at him, but the cunning ape dodged the rock and grabbed the lord's pot of liquor. Further infuriating Lord Balaram by laughing and by ridiculing him, wicked Dravida then broke the pot and offended the lord even more by pulling at the girl's clothing. Thus the powerful ape, puffed up with false pride, continued to insult Sri Balaram.